There's a very real and understandable tension that comes up when you talk about a ministry that also operates as a business. Because, of course, the questions come up like, well, what's it about? Is it about the ministry? What about the money? Is it about the money? Or should we limit how much money can be made if the actual purpose is ministry? And it gets messy. Hey, it's Matt. By the way, thank you for putting up with my voice. I've had this head cold thing. I sound a little bit like a Muppet. Forgive me. That is exactly what we're talking about, though, today. Not my head cold, but the balance of business and ministry. And there was nobody better we could have brought in than one of the top name superstars from the country music world, Jay DeMarcus. Jay DeMarcus, not only with Rascal Flatts, he also is an entrepreneur. He owns a Christian record label where he promotes Christian artists. And as you'll find out, he also once starred in my favorite B-movie franchise. Stick around. This is Consider It Joy.
Consider It Pure Joy.
Happy, happy joy, joy, happy, happy joy.
See if it sparks joy in you.
Because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance.
Well, I think anyone who has worked in any kind of ministry-based career has had to face this question, or maybe even this accusation, which is, well, if this is a ministry, why are you making money? Or when did it become more about money than it did about ministry and those sort of things? I know even in the business we're in Christian radio, we've had that sort of thing thrown at us. And I think nowhere have I heard that more than in the Christian music world. People love to point fingers and talk about this sort of thing. So our guest today is the perfect person to talk about this because he has been on every side of it. Christian music, mainstream music, in front of the microphone, behind the desk, all of it. The founder of Red Street Records, and you just might know him best from Rascal Flatts, Jay DeMarcus.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, we're honored to have you. Gosh, you know, when people meet you right away, you're most known for Rascal Flatts. But have you ever been, when people come up to you, what is something like, so for me, like I'm the local TV weather forecaster. I do radio. But when someone comes up to me and says, Aaron, I love that you're a worship leader. That's what they know me as.
Yeah.
That's what I'm most excited about. So when someone comes up to you, what is it that you're most excited to hear someone recognize you as?
You know, that's a really good question. I think for me, I always like to hear how my music has affected somebody or if it's marked a monumental occasion in their life. If they walked down the aisle to God Bless the Broken Road, or they got engaged to God Bless the Broken Road, or they went to their son's college graduation and the theme song was My Wish. Those moments really impact me because the best thing you can hope for as an artist is that your music affects people, right? It's one thing for them to listen to it and download it or stream it, but it's another thing to be the soundtrack to somebody's life. This lady one time came through the meet and greet line and said one of the best things ever. She said, you know, we're all here. My daughter's here with me, and now my grandson is here with me. They're three generation of Flatts fans because you guys have been the soundtrack to our lives. You've literally marked huge occasions for us. We've taken family vacations and road trips to jamming out to Life as a Highway. My daughter got married. Her first dance was God Bless the Broken Road. And my, you know, my niece had graduation where My Wish was played. So those things to be the soundtrack of somebody's life is, I think, the most rewarding thing you could hope for as an artist.
I would think, especially too, with all your years in this industry, that that's got to be one of the things that keeps it so meaningful and so interesting, you know, because I know sometimes it seems like, especially in the music side, the performing side, oh, it must get tiring, same songs every night or whatever, but not when you're having that, not when every day it's stories of real people, real lives, especially when it's been so impactful like that. That's powerful stuff.
And now
you're running a record label, Red Street Records. Let me just ask you about that right off the top, because you're now taking music in a different angle. You're actually running the whole direction of where it's coming from. Do you help shape the words in each song? How does that work as a guy running a label?
No, I try to stay hands off of the creative process for the artist to follow their own vision and their own heart for their ministry or their artistry, whatever the case may be. We have both country and a Christian division at the label. So I try to stay hands off of the creative process of them finding songs or writing songs. if I'm asked to come in to help produce, I'm ready to jump in and help any way I can. But I really want people to have the tools and the resources. And that's why I started Red Street, to follow their own vision and realize their own dreams, like somebody did for me many, many years ago. So it's so rewarding for me to be on this side of it now, so that I can help people have the same feeling that I've felt so many times standing on the stage and watching the impact that music has on people's lives is really, really extraordinary. And it's better than any drug or any buzz or anything you could ever think of. That feeling of seeing your music touch people in a certain way is the best feeling in the world. And I want that so badly for the other artists that we decide to invest our money and time into.
I love that you have such a positive outlook on it, on the why, you know, behind what you do, what you do. But I can't help but wonder, having been an artist for so long and now being on this side, was there any part of you you're like, I'm going to do it myself because I don't like this thing or that thing, or I've been through that process. I've been the artist. These are the things I would want to fix. Was any of that a factor in starting your own?
I think all of us in life take, in our experiences professionally and personally, take the good and the bad and try to hopefully avoid some of the pitfalls that sometimes we've had to learn the hard way. So what I've tried to do is I've been extremely blessed in my life to be surrounded by a lot of great men in the music industry who taught me a lot. I learned a lot from. But you always want to put your own spin on something. Otherwise, there's really no reason to do it. If you're going to go out and do something the same way everybody else has done, how in the world are you going to set yourself apart from the noise? How in the world are you going to raise your head above everybody else? And so for me, I've tried to take little bits and pieces from the guys that I've admired and the guys that I've considered mentors in this business, sort of throw that all together and make my own recipe for running my own label and kind of doing it the way that Jay DeMarcus wants to do it. Now, at the same time, I'll say this, I'm not somebody that is a Bible thumper or browbeats people over the head with the gospel, but my faith really matters to me. So I say at the same time to do it the way Jay DeMarcus wants to do, with God's direction, because I pray every day that I go into that office, he gives me wisdom and he guides me to make the best decisions, not only for Red Street, but the artists that we're investing in their lives and in their ministries as well.
Who are the guys that the men in your life that encouraged you? Who are the ones that you look up to? And did you bring any of them with you into the label?
You know, the very first guy that really impacted my life and changed it forever is Danny Murray. And he was a professor at Lee University that brought me there and gave me a full scholarship for music. I grew up really, really poor, had no plan to go to college. I was going to end up working construction at my grandfather's company. And he heard me at a youth, it was called Winterfest. My church used to have this thing called Winterfest. And we were in Indianapolis. I was a chaperone for the youth group. I was only 19 myself, but I'm chaperoning these 16 and 17 year olds. Had no plan for college, ran into Danny Murray. He was the director of the recruiting ensemble for the school. So they would go to Winterfest and they would go to youth camps and they would go to camp meetings and recruit for Lee University here in Cleveland, Tennessee. He asked me to audition for him. He said, the piano player we've been using just graduated, so we're kind of in between piano players. He found out I was a piano player, and he said, do you play by ear? I said, that's all I've ever played by. That Sunday morning, I had just met the man on Saturday night. I sat down at the piano, auditioned. God intervened in a huge way. As something clicked, Danny saw something in me, offered me a full ride right there on the spot. 12 days later, my life was completely turned around. I ended up at Lee University. He really, really impacted me and became like a second father to me. He was in my wedding. I still stay in touch with him. I really, really admired him as a family man and a man of God. He really set a fine example for all of us to follow. And so I seek his counsel on most of my major decisions that I have to make in my life. But there were other men later on in my life here when I moved to Nashville and I got in the music business. Dan Huff is one of those guys. I consider him a very, very dear friend. Also someone that I've really long admired his musical ability and his talent. He produced 6 of our albums with Rascal Flatts, but he's also become, you know, a real, real dear friend and a real mentor to me. Randy Goodman, who signed us at Lyric Street Records and is now the head of Sony, became a really dear friend of mine. We became really close over the 2 years that he was on our management team as well. Clarence Spaulding, who is my manager right now and has managed the Flats for the past 12 years, is a really dear friend of mine, and I consider him a mentor too. Those guys have gigs themselves, so I didn't bring them with me. But you can bet when I run up against something that I don't know how to do, or I'm at a loss and I just can't see my way through, they're the first people I pick up the phone and call and seek their advice.
I love the fact that, we're kind of diverting even from what we're going to talk about, but I think it's important to point out you're listing these guys not just as close friends, but as mentors. And, you know, sometimes I feel like there's probably times, especially in the music industry, and maybe not so much Christian music industry, I don't know, but where it's like somebody gets to the level, right? And once they're on the level, they don't have mentors. They've got it figured out. They know all the things. And I think it's fair to say, Jay, you've been on the level, you know, and to be able to still approach things with, like, I still have more to learn. I have people that pour into my life. I have people that are, you know, are willing to be there and say those things, questions that I can ask. I think that says a lot for everybody and the importance of having those people, just whether it's for a professional side or just, you know, for a faith building side, just for a life side.
I appreciate that. I have found out in my own life, one of the best things that I've been able to say is I don't know. Yeah. It's there's freedom in being able to say, I don't know. I hate it when people act like they know and try to fake their way through it and try to act like they have the answers. I found out it's easier to just go, I don't know, but I'm going to find somebody that does know, and I'm going to learn something else today. And I love to be able to dip into that wealth and the source and the resources that I have of those friends that are so willing to talk me through whatever the situation may be.
Well, it's Red Street, like it's like the newest Christian label or even country label. How many I don't knows do you have a week?
Probably say it 20 times a day, my friend, to be honest. Because I'm in a different role now than I've ever been in my life, but I've got really good people around me. God has blessed us to find really, really great people to staff our both sides of our divisions with, people that I've trusted for many, many years. A lot of the people that have found their way there worked with me while I was at Big Machine with Rascal Flatts. And so we've got some former Big Machine employees that I worked a decade with in releasing our records. So there's so much trust there. There's so much confidence in the fact that what I don't know, they have the ability to see their way through. And I've really enjoyed learning. There are certain aspects of the music business that I know better than they do, but there are certainly aspects of the business side that they know better than I do. So It's been a really great collaborative effort to for them to see through my eyes what I see as an artist working at a label, and for me to see through their eyes what they saw so many years working with us on the label side of things. So it's been really cool.
I'm just curious on this. So people, they're Flats fans. They see now Jay has gone over to create this label, but starts bringing in Christian artists. They're like, what's that all about? Like, why would he do that before, you know, these country artists start coming in involved? What was the idea? Like, hey, I want to make this, you know, ministry based.
You know, it's funny. Long before the pandemic hit in 2020, I started feeling the tug on my heart to be more involved in Christian music and be more bold in my faith, because the world seemed to be headed in the wrong direction and our country seemed to be headed in the wrong direction and becoming very, very divided. And I think people, in my view, are so desperate for any good news and any ounce of hope that they can get, that a lot of times, I'm not saying it's the end all be all and it will fix everything, but the message that the music of Christian artists carry is more vital now, I feel like, than it's ever been, because, you know, the listenership in Christian radio is up exponentially over the last couple of years. The streaming platforms have grown over the past 3 years, so much more than over the past 15 years, over the last 3 years, because of the pandemic and all that we've been through. It has been one of the fastest growing genres we've ever had. So that tells me something, that people are desperate for hope. They're desperate for the good news of Christ. And I think they're looking in all the wrong answers, wrong places for the right answers. And I'm trying to invest in people I feel like carry that message and are authentic in that message. And I'm also trying to spread the good news, because I feel like we need it now more than we ever have.
That's well said. I feel like, thanks for listening, everybody. That
mic drops.
Jay preaching. So we'll just be real upfront with you. Both Aaron and I, neither of us grew up as country music fans. We just weren't around it. Our families weren't really around it at all. But we did both grow up in and love Christian music, peak time in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, you were a part of that. And maybe not everybody knows that about East to West.
Well, I do. I know you do. Both your albums.
I know you do.
I would have brought it to have you sign it, but I can't because this is through Zoom.
Welcome to Nashville.
Man, it's my favorite song.
And then I know some of that came from, because you had kind of a gospel background and involved with some of those artists back in the day. Is that kind of where, is that how it came about, or how did you land in the place of a Christian rock band?
Well, I was absolutely raised on gospel music, Southern gospel music, the Imperials, Russ Taff. I mean, I was immersed in it from an early age. So I absolutely loved Christian music, everything from, you know, like I said, Southern gospel. I mean, and my mom and dad were huge Gaither Vocal Band fans. So I grew up on a steady diet of that. My mom was more stringent about her faith and her beliefs. My dad was a hippie rock and roller who played in the bars on Friday and Saturday, but would go to church with my mom on Sunday. So that's where I got the foundation for all of the rock, blues, soul, and country that I was raised on was from my dad. But my mom drug us to church 3 times a week. And every time I brought an album home, she would monitor my music intake. And if I brought an ACD record home that was, you know, Back in Black, she would listen to it and go, "That's not going to be played in my house." So I had to find alternatives to the music that I liked. Well, as I started to dig in, I found bands like Petra and Whiteheart and Mylon Lefevre and Broken Heart, Jeff Moore in the Distance, and all of these great acts that were wonderful alternatives to the music that I was hearing on secular radio. So I developed a great love and a great affinity for Christian contemporary music and Christian rock music. So it was a natural evolution for me that I started to write Christian music as a teenager, and I was completely consumed by it. I loved it. I loved the message. I loved the way I felt when I sang it. I loved the effect it had on people. People were really, really blessed by that music. And leading people into worship and leading people to discover something about themselves to where they decide that they need a savior is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And it still is very dear to my heart, and I'm still very, very close to it. Keep in touch with a lot of those folks that I was on Benson Records with, still dear friends with the guys in For Him. You know, we toured with Point of Grace. I even dated one of the girls in Point of Grace. So, I'm still immersed in that world, and I love it so much. And I try to stay connected to it any way that I can.
So I'm curious, because, you know, that drive, that's what gets you there. I, you know, it's so funny because my first radio gig was in country music. And I remember Rascal Flatts coming out on stage, and I had no idea that that was the same East to West as Rascal Flatts. I didn't know for 20 years.
Oh, really?
Man. And I'm a huge fan of music in general. So when I found out that fact, I'm like, where have I been? So what was it that gets you to mainstream rather than doing?
The gateway into East to West and the Christian rock into Flats.
There were a lot of things that led to that, and I wrote a book actually about it called Shotgun Angels. It's available on Amazon right now. And there were a lot of different twists and turns that my life took. We were together a little over 4.5 years. We did 2 records with East to West. It was my college roommate and I, Neil Coomer, who I'm still dear friends with. And we came to a crossroads to where we just felt like we couldn't see a path through to a future that made sense for both of us to stay in East to West. I had a lot of country music in me, a lot of songs that I wanted to sing. I really came to town to be a producer, and I've ended up being an artist twice now, kind of by accident. I was pitching myself as a songwriter when East to West got signed. I just had Neil sing my demos. They thought we were a band, and I was like, no, I want to be a songwriter. We ended up signing a record deal, and I found myself going, is this really, really what I want to do and what I feel called to do with the rest of my life? And so, fast forward to Rascal Flatts, my cousin calls me and says, I've been singing and winning some karaoke contests in Columbus. I'm like, come on down and stay with me. he didn't play an instrument. So every time he sang out, I played piano for him. I ended up being an artist again, completely by accident, trying to get him signed to a record deal and produce him. I will never, God has a much better plan in store for my life than I do. I understand that, but I did not, my end all be all dream was not to be an artist. And I ended up being in two different bands that were pretty successful. So if you want to read more about that, I go in more detail in the book, but a lot of twists and turns to get there. And I ended up right smack dab in the middle of another record deal with the Flats. That was really one of the greatest blessings in my life ever.
It seems like that's one of the things that most of us can connect with when you look back on your life and you realize that God put you in places in the most unpredictable ways, or the places like that, where it's like, that's not what I thought I was doing. not why I thought I was here. So having done so much of that, you know, we've kind of danced all around it, from the label side to two different artists to being under the Christian music label to the mainstream to all of it. Is there a favorite part of that for you? Is there like a season in that, like that ended up being like, oh man, this is the favorite part of all of the things I've done?
Well, I think some of the favorite times for me would not be what people would expect. You know, some of the favorite times were having special moments with those guys, Gary and Joe Don, backstage in an award show, winning our first award, putting our arms around each other, loving on each other, and realizing that we had worked so hard and done something so extraordinary together. Those are the moments that will forever be cemented in my memory and my mind, are the moments nobody saw, that we would cry in each other's arms because we knew what it took to achieve the goals that we had accomplished. Becoming members of the Grand Ole Opry, I used to take my summer vacations there and sit in the nosebleeds because my mom couldn't afford any better seats. And I would look down at that stage and I would go, this is so cool. I could never in a million years have imagined that I would stand in that circle and be invited to be part of that family someday. So those things to me are the treasures that I keep. But probably the thing that I'll forever be most proud of is when they rededicated the surgery center at Vanderbilt Children's Hospital, mm-hmm. the Rascal Flatts Surgery Center, because that is part of our legacy that will live on long after I leave the face of this earth. And to be able to contribute to such a wonderful place where so many miracles happen every single day over there has been one of the greatest achievements I think we've ever been able to accomplish. And I'm so proud of that. You know, we spent a lot of years there having concerts here at the Bridgestone and all the proceeds going to Vanderbilt, to where I think we were able to contribute over $7 million to them when it was all said and done. And I couldn't be, now that I have kids too, mm-hmm. and I realize the impact that it's had and how, and that it's more real to me now than it was before I had kids. And we were just sort of giving money away because we were blessed and we felt like we were paying it forward. Now it means so much more to me.
How does Jesus work in your job today? Like, obviously you got a Christian label. You help write Christian songs in the past. You have a family, but what does it look like as a business leader in your job?
Every staff meeting, we say a prayer. And I've made it clear that if you're uncomfortable being in the room when we're praying, then, you know, maybe you don't fit here. Maybe Red Street isn't the place for you, because we are very faith driven, even on the country side of things. Up until this point, even the country artists we've signed are believers, which is an extraordinary thing, because we've created this wonderful culture where everybody kind of tracks in the same direction, come at it from different angles and have different careers, but everybody's really kind of on the same page. And so to answer your question, Jesus is my constant. He is the guy and he is the person that I go to and I seek counsel before I even pick up and call those guys. I sit at my desk every morning and I read my devotion and I say a prayer before we start the day that the Holy Spirit will speak to me and guide me, and I will be the best leader that I can possibly be, even though I'm flawed human man, and that I will make the best decisions for our artists and for our company. I start every single day that way. We start every single staff meeting that way. And I wouldn't do it any other way. I wouldn't know how to do it any other way, to be honest with you.
So on that, because our topic is that balance of business and music and ministry. How do you find that? Because I'm sure you've heard some of those voices. I think maybe that's why I want to ask it, because we have too, you know, in the Christian radio land that are like, yeah, it's ministry, but is it ministry? And, you know, because it's making money. And some people don't maybe understand, first of all, it actually takes money to run businesses, to run ministries. The biggest ministries in the world are funded. But what is your philosophy on that, on striking that balance? So, you know, money doesn't start outweighing the more important things and so on.
I think you've got to keep it all in perspective. You know, I mean, you can be in ministry all day long, but if you're not able to pay your bills and feed your family, I don't believe God wants us to live that way. I believe he wants to bless his people and wants his people to prosper. So there's a difference between being money hungry and materialistic and simply wanting to make enough money to feed your family and to be prosperous. And for me, I always felt like if God blessed me and gave me the great blessing of Rascal Flatts and I was able to make money, then it was my responsibility to be a good steward of that and also to bless other people and pass it on. So I've tried to really be diligent about that. And I don't really, really like it when people condemn others for being successful and making money. I don't think that has a place. I don't think that's the way God wants us to treat each other. I love it when people succeed and they win and they make money. And quite frankly, there are people out there, you know, trying to spread the gospel and they can't even feed their family and rely on food stamps and they're suffering because they feel guilty if they make money. And I don't think that's the way he expects us to live either. That's my personal opinion, but I don't think that's healthy either.
Yeah. I think sometimes even within the church, we maybe have, either an unhealthy or just, we haven't learned good concepts like that because, you know, how many people take it the out of context verse, money is the root of all evil. And of course we know that's not it. Love of money is root of all evil. And to have a healthy approach and pretty much exactly with what you're saying, God gives us what he gives us in whatever capacity that might be to honor him, to bless other people. And I think if we have that healthy balance, not at the sacrifice of our family, not so our kids are starving, you know, and we're trying to live by religious rules, but we're actually living what Jesus lived, which was giving what he had to others. And if it moved the ministry forward, I don't think there's really a place to, you know, condemn that if people are,
I don't
with the right heart. Yeah.
I totally agree. I think that, you know, I've heard people say, I can't believe the pastor wore, you know, a $3,000 suit on Sunday morning to preach in. And I'm like, why? I mean, if he's been blessed enough to grow this church and have the kind of ministry outreach that he has, I'm kind of glad that my preacher looks fly on Sunday morning. I don't care what he wears at church. As long as he serves God and his heart is in the right place, that's all that matters to me.
I wouldn't even know what a $3,000 suit looks like. I mean, I wear one on television every day, but not that expensive, but like,
I think still, it lights up.
Yeah, LED lights. Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, when I think about what Jada Marcus has done, when I think about what you've done, bass player, songwriter, piano player, singer, producer, family man, married.
Weatherman.
You were a weatherman too?
Weatherman. I'm here on Channel 4.
Oh, no way. Okay. Weird. Like, man, we got to team up. I just think I don't hear this very often anymore. But I feel like it's something that I think maybe Americans have forgotten about, and leaders, is that a Renaissance man, somebody's willing to do everything. Now you're running a label. What's next?
Boy, I don't know. I've got enough on my plate right now to last a lifetime, it seems. But what's next is I want to try to turn this company into something. It's we spent a lot of time building infrastructure and signing artists. And now this is really our first real year and a half in business, and God has blessed us so far, but we got a long way to go. We're just getting started. So I just pray that I'm able to do the job he wants me to do and turn this company into something that honors him. I feel like I'm in a new season in my life to where I've lived the past 22 years in a wonderful band, being able to sing songs that have impacted people and meeting wonderful people all over the world. And now I feel like it's my turn to sort of give back to people that are in a similar situation that I was in and were just looking for a chance to realize their dreams. And so if I look too far into the future, it feels overwhelming. So I concentrate on tomorrow. I just want to do better tomorrow than I've done today and try to move that same philosophy forward.
And for anybody who may not be familiar, because I know a lot of like casual listeners may not connect labels with artists, but Jason Crabb and Consumed by Fire and Yvette Luna and all, all of those three, they were all just involved in Dove Award nominations that just came out as of this recording, right?
Yeah, they were. They absolutely were. And Cade Thompson is another young artist that's had great success for us on the Christian side.
I'm a huge fan of Cade Thompson on his sound. Just love it.
He's a good kid. Really pop, which I love. And I think we've missed, I don't want to get too critical of Christian radio, but it shifted in the late 90s to really praise and worship vertical driven music, which, believe me, has its place. But we started losing great bands like Whiteheart and Audio
West.
East to West and people like that, because it didn't really fit anymore with what the format was doing. And I really hope we're headed toward a future where there's room for both. We can have praise and worship, but we can also have fun music that connects us with each other and deals with life's issues. And I think we need it. I think kids still need an alternative to the pop crap that's out there sometimes, you know.
Jay,
you just won our hearts.
Well, I was gonna say, you gotta be careful, man. You're gonna get us all fired up, and we're gonna go on this topic for the next 3 hours.
This is what we preach upon every day when we're not on the radio.
Yeah, it is right there with you, man. So with that in mind, all those, whether it was the sounds from the 90s or again all the sounds you've been involved in, from country and gospel, contemporary rock, what does Jay DeMarcus listen to? It's the end of a long day. You leave the office. You get in your car. What is your go-to?
NFL radio.
There you go. Uh-huh.
I'm telling you something. This is weird about me, but I spend so much time with my head in mixes and making music that when I'm in my car, I listen to talk radio because I'm so distracted by the sounds and the music and its imperfections that I don't find myself enjoying it and just sitting back and listening to it because I'm so deep in it every day. So for me, I kind of need a break from it. So I just sit back and try to listen to either some news, or most of the time it's on NFL 88, channel 88.
I totally get that, because I'm the same way. As soon as I leave, and I love the music we play here, but when we're evaluating and testing and listening and playing it all day long, I got to go a complete different direction. So I sit in my car. It's either going to be like news talk or hip hop, but so either way, it's got to be a completely different direction. Just as
I totally get it. Uh-huh. I totally get it. I feel like I'm more ready to face the next day fresh if I kind of put it out of my mind for a little bit.
I'm curious about, sometimes, at least here, and now we're in Bakersfield, and Bakersfield is a huge country music.
Mm-hmm. Love that. I just played the Crystal Palace back in May with my brother.
That's right, you did.
Yeah. And so we bump into this sometimes, but it seems like there's a lot of crossover, even I think, in the audience of Christian music and country music. And with you having been in both those kind of worlds, what similarities or differences do you see maybe on, I don't know, in some respect that like we just as listeners maybe wouldn't notice as much? Like, are there that many similarities, say, on an artist's side, or is it a lot different?
I got a lot to say about this. So I think that there are more similarities than differences. There are a lot of believers in country music, but sort of feel unwelcomed in Christian music because it tends to be a boys' club. Right. So if you're if you're out singing country music and you're singing party music and you're singing about having a beer in a bar with your boys on the weekend, but you still have a heart for Christ and you're still a believer, chances are you're going to have a hard time if you do a record singing about your faith, getting that played in Christian music, right?
Yeah.
And the hope and the desire I've always had is that our two genres meld a little bit more, because I can promise you there are as many Christian music listeners that show up at a Rascal Flatts show as there are country music listeners. The two demographics are nearly the same.
Yeah.
The same people that listen to Christian radio driving to work in the morning, when they're driving home from work, I guarantee you're listening to their local country station because they love it all. And I have a sincere desire that we can get to a better place of embracing each other and allowing each other to make music in both genres. And that a country music guy like a Chris Lane, who we just signed, is welcome to come over and sing about his faith, which means a whole lot to him, and won't be judged because he sings a song that happens to mention drinking a beer on a tailgate in it.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we can be too, what's the word I'm looking for?
Legalistic, maybe?
Yeah, we can be too inside of ourselves sometimes that we're not open to somebody that has not been exposed to being in a Southern Baptist church or,
right,
you know, evangelical Christianity, that just wants to express their faith to come over and be able to do that. And I think we need to get to a place where we can tolerate more of that.
It's true, because if you think about it through the lens of a film, Christians will go watch a movie that might be rated PG-13 or R, but yet be in church the next Sunday singing songs from Elevation Worship. And I'm like, well, I would never listen to a song with a guy drinking beer. So like, what's the difference?
Really, really, really good point. I think we start to split hairs there because we accept some things, but we don't accept other things. And, you know, it's my one thing about praise and worship music that I will say, I love it myself, but I've gone to church my whole life. If I'm trying to explain to my buddy who's never been in a church but's been in a rock band that I know from L.A. what it means to be a Christian and sing Christian music, he doesn't identify with that.
Right.
But if I play him something from White Heart that sings about something else that he can identify with, it's better for him. It's a better way to get through to Jesus to him than dealing with something he's never been exposed to.
So that means we're gonna get more Christian rock bands from you is what you're telling me.
I don't know. I don't think so, because they're not successful. They can't stay together. They can't pay their bills. It's heartbreaking.
It's true.
It's a vicious cycle. We actually just had a conversation with Chris Cleveland, with Stars Go Dim, on our last podcast, talking about that idea of labels. Now, if anyone wants to go hear the whole thing, it was a great discussion, but you know, the idea of how we label specifically in music, should we use Christian and secular to define it? Or if we're going to use those terms, you know, what qualifies and what doesn't? And you quickly realize what we're talking about now is you get wrapped up in a framework that we've all kind of designed that doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of crossover, and you start getting from into a legalistic framework that isn't really addressing what a song or artist is about. And it's more about, oh, it used that word, it used that theme, it was about the beer in the pickup truck. That's a disqualifier. And I love those conversations, because I think more people need to engage it at that level rather than, because it's art. Like, who takes an art class, you know, and says, okay, well, here's the good art, here's the bad art. There's a better metric, you know, and yeah, kind of what you're talking about, faith themes, and like, God can use anybody in that. Some things are clearly maybe not good, not edifying, but there's
of course,
but there's plenty of things I think that you're addressing that are have a lot of value, and from people that are doing what they feel God has called them to do.
God gave us all common sense, and we've got to employ it sometimes. We know what people's motives are when they hear what they have to say and what they have to sing. And I'm telling you, I love being in a band that was a country band that just so happened to have three believers in it. And the greatest thing that was ever said by somebody that came to our show, Joel Osteen, came to see us in Houston, and he said, I love being at a Rascal Flatts show because people are out there partying, they're drinking their beers, they're jumping up and down, they're singing summer nights, and you guys have snuck the gospel in so many times during your show, they leave there not even having realized that they've heard the good news of Christ.
Yeah.
That means everything to me. And that's what we're all trying to do. And all I'm saying at the end of the day is, if somebody wants to sing about their faith and they just so happen to have also recorded a song that may have talked about them drinking a beer in the back of their truck, we got to be careful how closely we judge that, because there are a lot of good people out there that believe Christ is their savior and shouldn't be excluded from what we're trying to do is make the world a better place.
So will we get a Christian song? Yeah, here I'm labeling it. will we get something from one of your country artists to swing over into the, like, leave a song out for, I guess, Christian radio?
We may or may not be working on one right now.
Okay. All right, there it is.
All right.
There it is.
Well, Jay, you've been very generous with your time and your feedback. There's one question I've been sitting on and I've really wanted to ask.
Let me say this, Jay. He has been sitting on this. He wanted to jump out the gate
all,
with this
all day long, because you've done these massive things. Flatts, one of the biggest country bands of all time, and the Christian world and the production and Red Street and what you're doing. All, I feel like, probably pale in comparison to the fact that you were in Sharknado 4. And I am legitimately a huge fan those movies.
No idea.
Sharknado franchises. How on earth did you end up in Sharknado 4?
And before you answer, he was just at the Comic Con.
I was at the 10th anniversary Sharknado panel. Yes.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I got that email, actually, that invite to be part of that. It didn't work out. You know, I have an acting agent. I do. If you go on IMDb, I've got a pretty extensive film and television resume there. It's acting is something that I love to do when I have the time to do it. And I had some friends that put me up for the role, and I read for it. And they said, it'd be fun if you were this hotel manager. I happened to be out in Vegas anyway, doing one of our residencies with the Flatts. So it worked out for my shooting schedule and my residency schedule. And I've always been a secret closet fan of all the Sharknado movies. And I thought, this is one I cannot miss. And my good buddy Carrot Top was in there too. So
yeah,
I could hang out with him for a while.
Well, you got me too. Me and you, Jay, we'll be the fan club for the Sharknado franchise.
More than welcome to come back for another Sharknado if they have another.
Yes, yes, yes. Please let us know if they ever need radio DJs in one of them. Well, Jay, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. This has been awesome hearing from you a little bit of that story and intention and heart behind it. That's meant a lot.
And I'll say this. Is there anything you want to tell our listeners out there about Red Street and what they should be looking forward to, or just a mission statement?
You know, I would just ask them to lift up some prayers for us. The music is an ever-changing landscape. We're trying to keep up with it. We want to do the best for our artists, and we want to honor God with all that we do. So just lift us up in prayer that God will bless us and give us the wisdom to guide the company and our artists in the ways that honor him.
Love it.
Can't think of a better way to wrap it up. You guys all know Rascal Flatts. Everybody go listen to a bunch of East to West. Go watch Sharknado 4. Consider it Joy. It's a production of 88.3 Life FM in Bakersfield, California. You can listen to us every weekday on the 88.3 Life FM app. You can also find all the ways to listen and connect at consideritjoypodcast.com.